It is a sacred time, this, and a sacred place, this. It is a place for questions more profound than answers, vulnerability more powerful than strength, and a peace that can pass all understanding. It is a sacred time, this. Let us begin it together in song.
People have used the phrase, priesthood of all believers, to represent several different ideas. Martin Luther originally used it to express the idea that the common people were as close to God as the priests were. How is it used today? I went to the true source of knowledge, Google, and found many internet explanations, all almost firmly in one of two camps. Unitarian Universalist sites say there are no chosen class of people to tell us what to believe, but that we can believe whatever we want. Christian sites disagree on the details, but they do agree on one thing. People can't just believe whatever they want. I originally heard the phrase, the priesthood of all believers, in my exploration of modern pagan religion, where many use it to mean that anyone can perform the rituals necessary to communicate with their gods. Even before I heard the phrase, the word priesthood was a positive one for me. I've always thought of priests as a very special sort of people, ones who are confident and wise in their faith, live their faith fully, and spend much of their lives in service to others. The idea of all believers being called to be priests appealed to me because it meant that I was expected to be all of these things, confident and wise in my faith, living it fully, and spending time in service to others. The importance of having a priesthood of all believers isn't about what we can or can't believe, but about living our lives with these priestly attributes. In thinking about incorporating those attributes into my life, I realized that although I am growing more confident in my faith and hope that at least some of the time I am wise, I am definitely lagging behind in service to others. It's not that I haven't given my money to charities that serve others, but that I've never given my time. And I think that without giving my time, that there are many people's stories that I want to hear and that I need to hear that I haven't heard yet. In my life, I've been successful partly because I have such a strong network of friends. When one of us is having problems, we give each other advice and support. Now we're trying to give that same support to others who need it. Several of us recently committed to a year-long volunteer effort through an organization called Family Pathfinders. We are paired with a single mother on public assistance. She's in her early 20s, has two kids, and is without a car. Without a car, even the smallest things, like getting the kids to school or to daycare, can be surprisingly difficult. Our job is to help her and her family become self-sufficient by using our communal knowledge and networks to give them the advice and support we give each other. This past Thursday, we met them for the first time, and I think all of us are excited and nervous about the coming year. Even though the phrase is quite old, I wanted to tell you a recent story about my part in the priesthood of all believers. So far, I have only a beginning, but I'm looking forward to the year ahead. I'm looking forward to learning new stories, and I'm looking forward to continuing my path among the priesthood.
In the center of our service and the center of our lives, let us make room for life's quieter sides. You may use these first moments for lighting candles of memory and hope, or just sitting quietly, remembering who you are and why you are here. Let us join in an attitude of prayer. We daily pray and daily fear that for which we daily pray. We daily pray that we will finally be called by our true name, recognized for our high and noble qualities rather than just our lower ones. For the world seldom acknowledges us as much more than an insignificant piece in a puzzle which we are to serve but not question. That's what keeps the majority serving the minority. People who are convinced they are powerless serving those who have convinced them they alone are right. It may be demeaning and disempowering, but it is so common, so ordinary, it seems to be the way of the world. And so we daily pray that something in the wind will call us by our true name, our high and noble name as children of God, the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. And we daily fear that it might happen, and that we will then feel compelled to act as though our highest name were also our highest call to action. Let us welcome the prayer, but not the fear. Amen. This Wednesday, I attended a Sierra Club benefit downtown in the Warehouse District at Antone's. Arlo Guthrie was there, and he looked a great deal older than I remembered him from 35 years ago. His daughter was also there performing with her band, and she told a story about her dad that stuck with me. Arlo's one big hit recording was Alice's Restaurant, and later he bought a church in the town where Alice's Restaurant was. And he was inside the church he'd bought, cleaning it up, when a local minister came in, and he asked what Arlo was doing there, and Arlo said, sweeping the floor. The minister was very upset by the idea that he had bought a church, and he said, what kind of a church is this? Arlo hadn't been prepared for this question, and so he answered, it's a bring-your-own-God church. Now that sounds irreverent, fun, but irreverent. But the truth is that every person brings their own gods, not only to church, but everywhere we go. And that includes the priests. If a million people say they believe in God and you spend a lot of time talking to them, you'll find that they believe in about a million different gods. Many of them aren't even worth serving. The idea behind Martin Luther's notion of the priesthood of all believers was that the responsibility to find gods worth serving is the personal responsibility of each one of us. The fact that priests wear fancy costumes doesn't mean that they are any closer to God than anyone else is, even though that's sometimes very hard for us to believe. We are so dazzled by costumes. Luther, though he was a medieval man, also defined gods in a very modern way. He said our gods are the things that we happen to serve with our lives, whether good or bad. Very existential, very psychological, very much like St. Augustine, his mentor. So the challenge in this God-finding business is identifying gods worth serving and then serving them rather than something less. And I want to say with Luther that people shouldn't put so much trust in churches to automatically provide them with the right gods. What you get in church are other people's gods. I can tell you about mine. People tend to assume that maybe since priests wear dazzling costumes, or at least hold the microphone, that the gods they're offering will serve you rather than them. That's always the ideal. It's always the hope. And sometimes it's true. But not always. The history of both religion and politics, which have now been married in an unholy union again, shows that those who control the big words and wear the dazzling costumes and travel with aides and entourages too often use their costumes and their entourage to dazzle us so that we will serve them rather than the other way around. The Protestant Reformation would probably not have happened when it did had not the Pope at the time, Pope Leo X, been by almost universal acclamation one of the very worst popes in history. There are two quotations that have been associated with this pope through history that can give you some feel for his character. He was one of the Medicis. One quotation came from a letter to his brother where he wrote, "Since God has given us the papacy, let us enjoy it." The other quote attributed to him is one I first read in graduate school 25 years ago, where Pope Leo X wrote, "It has served us well, this myth of Christ." Pope Leo still stands as a prime example of someone using an office and a costume to deceive and bilk the masses. He did it very famously, and it led to the Protestant Reformation. It's worth knowing some of the history, partly because it's so awful and partly because it's so funny. He wanted to make a lot of money. He wanted to raise money to build St. Peter's. And so he came up with a scheme, and he sold to the Catholic masses throughout Europe, he sold what were called indulgences. Now think about this. It's a pretty clever deal. It means that for a fee, they could buy pre-forgiveness for their many sins so that they might not burn quite as long in hell. It's kind of like an insurance policy. Pay now, fly later. It was a good racket because fear works well with disempowered people, and it helps to keep them disempowered. So Pope Leo got more creative. After all, why should you limit your begging only to the living? So he came up with a new idea, very creative. He started selling indulgences for dead relatives. This is true. You don't want your grandmother or grandmother suffering in hell, do you? Well, even though they're already dead, for a fee, you can save them some suffering. They're suffering right now. It's the least you can do. Now, that's brilliant in a really scummy way. This was the practice that made Martin Luther so angry that he challenged the Pope and wound up splitting the church now into thousands of pieces with the Protestant Reformation. It came from that practice. Martin Luther's primary message was that we are justified by faith, not works. What that means is this was a 16th century way of saying, look, God didn't make junk, including us, and that schemes like the Pope's to convince us that he knows who is saved and who is damned are the schemes of a charlatan, which we are called to expose. So the priesthood of all believers is really one of the boldest ideas in history. It says, don't be dazzled by costumes and titles, because they carry no religious authority at all. None. And many who hold those titles and wear those impressive costumes know this, as Pope Leo X so cynically and clearly did. And they use the gullibility of the masses and the fact that we do tend to defer to authority figures to mislead them, to rob them, and to assign them a second-class status they don't deserve. Such false gods are almost always served by those in costumes, official positions, and power. Why is that? Because if you can control a society's most powerful symbols and stories and myths, you can control the majority of the people in the society. If your side can claim to represent God, America, truth, justice, and love, you will win every election, even the fair ones. Pope Leo provides one of the great religious examples of someone in power abusing and betraying both the people and the high ideals that he was charged with serving. But it happens not just in religion. It happens at least as often in politics. And 3 days ago, Thursday, was the anniversary of one of the most dramatic and inspiring examples of an American citizen acting under the priesthood of all believers, exposing a political charlatan. It's an anniversary that we shouldn't let go by without recalling. On June 9th, 1954, Army Counsel Joseph N. Welch confronted Senator Joseph McCarthy during the Senate Army hearings. McCarthy had made a very cheap, fairly vicious attack on a young member of Welch's law firm as a way of getting even with Welch for questioning him. In one of the most famous and, I think, principled statements in the history of American politics, Welch said, "Have you no sense of decency, sir? At long last, have you left no sense of decency?" The audience broke into wild applause, and that broke the spell of McCarthyism. Those lines. I saw that confrontation on live television as a 12-year-old boy. And without understanding the full meaning of what the proceedings were about, I remember the powerful impression as a 12-year-old that I knew that Welch was a heroic figure and McCarthy was an evil man. Senator McCarthy was one of the most powerful and most vicious men in American politics. He had terrorized the country and intimidated the other senators for over 3 years with his self-serving hunt for communists. It was self-serving rather than patriotic because he manipulated facts, people, and the media not to serve America and not to serve the truth, but to draw attention to himself, and he hoped to get a presidential nomination. The God that he served was a kind of selfish and brutal thing that seemed to sanction any means necessary for him to pursue his own ends. Do you see this? That what Joseph Welch did shows the same kind of courage and perception of the priesthood of all believers that Luther had championed over 400 years earlier. In both cases, a figure with position and title had betrayed the high calling of his office, had degraded high ideals and turned people into things to be used like pawns. And in both cases, a person without any comparable authority or costume exposed them as frauds and charlatans. Now, connecting these two stories with current events is almost too easy. But it's important to see the actual standards being practiced in our world contrasted with the highest standards so that we can find ourselves in this ongoing drama and wonder if we're called to do anything. Last Sunday, as you all know, with one media-seeking flourish of his pen, Texas Governor Rick Perry and the Cavalry Christian Academy of Fort Worth christened a new religion, which might be called Texas Christianity. It's a religion so petty and hateful, it could be considered the cult of the Antichrist. Not only are gays vilified, but Governor Perry even suggested that gay soldiers returning from Iraq might want to move to another state. Jesus said, "Whatever you do to the least of these, you do also to me." Rick Perry hopes whatever he can get away with doing to the least of these will advance his political career. Then the next day, the Pope came out against what he called, quote, trivialization of the human body. I was encouraged for a second when I saw that phrase. I thought he was going to be talking about the sexual abuse of children by his priests. But no. Instead, he was talking about gay marriage between two adults who love each other. Looking back in history, we have no trouble recognizing a Joseph McCarthy or a Pope Leo X as men of low character who betrayed the high calling of their office. Let's not pretend that it's any harder here. Let's not pretend anything less went on here. Governor Perry behaved like a cheap and sleazy politician, not because he was a Republican, but because what he did violated high ideals for low personal aims. He dragged both Christianity and the highest aspirations of Texans down to the gutter because he hopes the gutter will bring him personal gain. That's cheap. And Joseph Ratzinger, now known by the title Pope Benedictus XVI, has shown the quality of his character his entire life, from his days as an eager Hitler youth to his days as the eager Grand Inquisitor. And last Monday, he reduced a religion supposedly centered on Jesus to a level so bigoted and hateful he has disgraced every Christian on earth and all people who believe in goodness, truth, and love. Both these small men were shameful traitors to any high calling, using their office to serve personal political ambition and a repressive and vicious form of authoritarian religion designed to subjugate people rather than empower them. The priesthood of all believers says that the common people, without titles or dazzling costumes, are as close to God as any governor or pope. This week, we were considerably closer.